are these ultra successful high net worth people driven more by demons, fear, insecurities than they are positivity?
I would say that they're driven by physiological issues. So there's genetic, there's neurochemical, like depression, anxiety. There's a biological component here, and we need to look at the science. And we need to take these issues out of the realm of personal agency and morality, and we need to put them where they are genuinely, where they were, how they arise. And they arise in our bodies, and they arise in our neurochemical. And it's not all one thing, but we need to address that. And then we need to look at addressing a behavioral health issue, addressing personality disorder, narcissism. And now narcissism isn't necessarily genetically predisposed. It's more environmental. But if a depressive disorder, right? We need to look at the science. We need to look at the medical interventions. And then we need to look at the context. And I address mental health issues in three significant areas of our life. The intrapersonally, like what's happening under my skin. Interpersonally, what are the primary relationships in my life that are impacting this? And then social culturally, like what's the social cultural message? Because we all exist. Everything exists in a context. And so I think that's how we need to address it in those particular issues.
And what percentage of our behaviors and our success and our life is determined by our genetics, do you think, just from a gut instinct reaction? Because I think Jeff Bezos said, we don't choose our passions choose us. But it's just, I'm just so fascinated by the genetics of how certain genes can influence your behavior and make you more obsessive, more focused, less depressive. And what percentage do you think it is influenced by?
So fluctuating between 30-70 and 50-50. I'm going to hedge and I'm going to do 50-50.
Yeah.
Because basically, we could be genetically predisposed to alcoholism. Mm-hmm. If we never consume alcohol, then that gene will never be activated. Mm-hmm. So it's important to look at that. It's always important to look at, I'm a family therapist, so I was trained systemically and as a family therapist. So we need to look intergenerationally. We need to look at genetics. We need to look at biology. We need to look at intergenerational trauma. We need to look at all of those things. And historically, what family genogram is called, where you look at your family, the history of your family. And historically, clinicians have looked at behavior, mental health disorders. And then I like to look at money. Like, how has money played out in your family? So if I look at my family, my great-grandfather came over from Germany to America, started business, lost businesses. My grandfather was an alcoholic, same thing, would have it. So my father then internalized incredible financial insecurity. And so he became obsessed with obtaining financial security in his life. And he passed that down to my brother and me. And so the decisions that I made early on my developmental path were based upon this narrative of scarcity, that there's not enough. A much different way you orient your life, much differently if you internalize a message of scarcity than abundance.
Yeah.
And so whilst my family, we had emotional, I don't know whether you had emotional abundance, but we had more emotional stability than we had financial stability. But a lot of the patients who I work with, the opposite is the case. Mm. They come from this profound emotional abundance, financial abundance, but emotional scarcity. And so then they live their life because human beings, we are self-actualizing. We are pulled to heal and grow. That's who we, that's how we're genetic. It's Darwinistic, right? Survival of the fittest. It's not the strongest species that survive. It's the most clever. It's the ones who can figure out how to be safe and secure in the world, essentially. And that plays out. And that's why I always want to know, like, I always want to look at family history in terms of how wealth has been created and lost and how wealth is viewed in families. I don't know. I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot again. How is wealth viewed in your family?
Not in abundance, very scarce. Parents came from working class families. My grandparents, they were very working class. Like every single one of them came from working class.
Right.
I think they moved down from the north of England to come to mine, actually, on one of my mum's dad's side. And then my parents still grew up working class, but then both actually achieved master's degrees. But not, again, it's the same with you. The emotional stability is definitely there. Like, I have such an emotionally stable family. I absolutely love my parents, and I have no trauma there, as far as I'm aware. But the money, in comparison to the emotional stability, is definitely scarcer. And a lot of members in my family reject wealth, to be honest. I won't obviously name names because it doesn't matter. But yeah, but I've gone the opposite direction. So when, I think this is quite common, when you're a teenager, you love to be very almost virtue signaling and more rejecting capitalism or reject and becoming a bit more socialist. But over time, as I've branched out and become my own person, I've realized the benefit of building wealth. And yeah, I think having a granddad, my granddad on my mum's side, he was very entrepreneurial. So maybe there's some genetic components as well, but there's definitely a fundamental difference between how a lot of my family see wealth and grew up in relation to wealth, their relationship with money, versus how I want to have a relationship and build wealth, for sure. Hey guys, first of all, I want to say thank you. There's one person who's been sharing the podcast more than anybody else, and that is you. The only reason why this podcast continues to grow is because you are sharing it. And my only ask is, if this podcast has provided value to you, or you think it'll provide value to somebody else, then if you could send them a DM of the link or a screenshot to the show, that would genuinely make my day. And it's the only way the podcast will continue to grow. That's my only ask of you. Thank you very much.
It's there, right? And I think a lot of people tend to ignore and pretend that it's not there. And I think my work, like, let's put this in the fore because this is real and this impacts. And, you know, and you mentioned value signaling, which is a really important construct here, because if we look at how wealth has been viewed biblically, historically, there's language all over the New Testament and the Old Testament in terms of it's easier for, what is it, a camel to get through an eye of a needle than a rich man into heaven. We look at even Eastern philosophies, the Buddha came from a privileged noble family and tried aestheticism and it didn't work in the middle road, which is consistent with the middle class. And so he had to relinquish his position of power and wealth to attain enlightenment. And I think that we have internalized that and we believe that. And I don't believe that. I believe that you can have wealth and you can be a person of value and dignity and add value back to the world. And that's what my work strives to do. Now, mind you, my sample size, people come to me because that's what they want to do. That's what they want to accomplish. They come to me and they say, Dr. Paul, I have all this money and yet I'm miserable and unhappy and it's destroying me. And how can I get ahead of this? How can I, without giving it away, right? Like giving some of it, but not relinquishing it, right? Because that's that all or nothing mentality. And you don't need to purge it from your life. You can integrate it into your psyche and your relationships in your life in a healthy, productive way. There's two relevant constructs from psychology, assimilation and accommodation. Accommodation is where you have, so for instance, I have a patient, I've had patients who've inherited huge sums of money, didn't know that they were going to do this. And they see themselves as a physician. That's their primary identity. And now all of a sudden they're an heiress and they're like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, I didn't plan for this. And my perception of an heiress is not me because I put myself through medical school and I didn't like all of this stuff. And so how do then we then accommodate that identity? And then how do we assimilate that into their larger identity in a healthy, constructive way?